Hello and welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies. I am Noah, and I am here with
Kayla.
And we're back with our fourth Pixar episode.
Yeah, that sounds about
fifth.
No, fourth.
Toy Story 4, Onward.
Oh, Soul, Onward.
Luca. Can't forget Onward.
My brain basically erased that movie from my memory.
Wow. I didn't think it was that bad.
No, it's just forgettable.
I think the only reason I remember it is because it was like the last big movie I saw before the pandemic. Because
it's just forgettable for me, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I watched it twice and I probably will never watch it again. Like, I don't need any more watches on that one. But we are here to talk about the newest Pixar film, which is Turning Red.
Wow.
We'll get into some history of the film, some non-spoilers, some spoilers, all the good stuff. But first, we have to go over last week's answers that we got to the question of the week. What was our question of the week last week?
Our question was, what is your favorite Batman movie? Because we shared our top three. My favorite is The Batman.
And I did like a tie between The Dark Knight and The Batman. Because like you need some time, you know. I don't know. I wasn't ready to crown it quite yet.
Sure.
But we got a lot of varied answers. So let's go through a couple of these. So we got two calls out for The Dark Knight from Zach Smith Michaels and Dan. They both said The Dark Knight. Which is, I think even with The Batman right now, that's the main one that people point to, because I think maybe in time, in like a couple of years, it will change. But that's still, I think, the main fallback. We got two mentions of the Lego Batman movie. No, I'm sorry. One person said Lego Batman, that movie. And then another person said the Lego movie, which I don't know if I would consider. I don't know if she's referring to the Lego movie, the movie, or the Lego Batman movie. You know what
Probably
I'm saying?
Probably the Lego Batman movie.
Okay, yeah. I haven't seen that one in so long. I watched it one time, and it was a while ago, so.
And Waffle also said Lego Batman on Spotify.
Yeah, that seems to be like, I think Mask of the Phantasm was once the niche pick. I think now the cool pick is Lego Batman.
Yeah,
like, I've seen
that was one
going around.
I almost rewatched for the episode, but I didn't get a chance.
We have Andy coming in saying Batman Returns, which is a great choice. Pretty cool. That's like the cool kid choice, you know. I'm not like other girls. Batman Returns.
Anyone who I've seen that says Batman Returns, I'm automatically like, I like them.
That makes sense.
I think that they're cool.
Even though you haven't seen it, but you just
know, because it's so much more niche and out there, and like, I just feel like it goes against the grain, and they're not afraid to say it.
No, definitely. It's way better than the first one, I think. So, and then we have Bryce. He said, unpopular pick for the podcast, but Batman Begins is what he said. That's obviously your favorite.
I feel like the most,
hated.
Yeah, would be the third one.
Yes, I think that's like everyone is in agreement that the third one is pretty much
worst. I feel like it's not. It is an unpopular opinion to say Batman Begins, but I feel like it's not as unpopular as if you said like
he said unpopular opinion for us because you don't like Batman Begins.
I do not.
That's what he was referring to, I think. So yeah, I think Batman Begins is a cool answer. Like, it's definitely the most comic booky of the three, which I think on its own it can be pretty cool. I actually think it's kind of hard to go from that one to Dark Knight because the tone is so weird. Like, it's just a very weird, it doesn't fit with the other two, which doesn't mean it's not good. It's just like, I always have a hard time setting that one as part of the same series. But yeah, that's some good answers there. We got a lot of different opinions. People just love Batman, you know? He's just like, he's a cool guy.
Yeah, Batman's great, but you know what else is great? You know who else has a hidden
Audible?
Hidden. I wish Audible sponsored us.
Yeah.
No, what is the VPN one? The ExpressVPN.
ExpressVPN.
Yeah. No, you know who else has a hidden identity?
Who?
May from Turning Red.
She does. She is true. She is the next Batman, actually.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the history of this particular movie? Because it's a little bit crazy.
Yeah, I would love to. So Domi Shih started working for Pixar in 2011 as an intern. Wow. Doing storyboard work as a storyboard artist. And then she worked on many feature films, Inside Out, Incredibles 2, Toy Story 4, doing storyboard work. In 2018, she directed Bao, which was originally approved in 2015. So she became the first woman to direct a short film for Pixar, which won Best Animated Short at the 91st Academy Awards, obviously. Which,
that's a good short. I like that
It was
one.
Cute. It was it one of the, great. Like, Pixar shorts used to be so iconic. And then I feel like they dropped off a little bit. But that was one that was like, this one is good. And
no, it was great.
Definitely is reminiscent of some of the older ones.
Yeah, they kind of are going away from the shorts. I mean, now because a lot of them are now just on Disney Plus, you know? So Luca, I think he had a short technically attached, but no one's going to really know that.
Sure.
They're just going to see, to scroll to Luca. And even before that, though, Onward, that short was the Simpsons short. So they definitely, have moved away from the shorts in the past few years.
So when she was, before Bao was actually released, she pitched the idea for Turning Red to Pixar, specifically Pete Docter, who she considers a mentor. She worked with him on Inside Out, and he's obviously, the chief creative officer at Pixar. Right. So that was approved and it began development in 2018. So it is the first Pixar feature film directed solely by a woman, and the second to feature a prominent Asian character, the first being Up. And the movie was officially announced with the title and plot on December 10th, 2020. And now
only
here
took
we
us
are.
25 movies to get woman director in a Pixar movie.
But here was something that I thought was interesting about it, and kind of shows a lot of this movie was very almost grassroots efforts. It was a smaller team at the beginning, lots of women creators coming together to just work on this. But they had the main girl who plays May, Rosalie Chang. She was originally cast when she was 12 years old. So this was obviously when they first began development. So I think she's 16 now, and she had very little acting experience. She had only done a few short films, a few minor voiceover roles, and they had only hired her as a placeholder to do scratch vocals as they developed the animation and the scenes and all that. And they really also only cast her as that because she lived in very close proximity to the studio.
Oh,
and so
classic.
It was very easy to have her record sessions for them and stuff. And then 2 years after development, they were feeling good about the movie. They were feeling good about everything. And they're like, all right, it's time to start auditioning our voice actors, get some talent in here. And they're doing that for all the roles. And so they get to May's role and they start doing audition process. And then they're like, we can't do it. We have to have her be the voice of May, because they had grown so attached to the way she played the character and voiced the character in the scratch takes. So they went directly to Pete Docter.
To the man himself.
And said, look, this kid, we just can't let her go. We need her to be May. And he personally approved her cast in the role.
Wow.
Which is super cool. And then the way that they told her, which I thought was very cute, was in one of their regular recording sessions, the director gave her an additional page of lines where it actually said that
oh, wow.
she was like... But the director was reading as the mom, and in it, she basically offered her the role in this extra page of the script.
Oh, that's nice.
Isn't that so cute?
That is nice, yeah.
I was like, oh my God.
It makes sense, too, because, like, for 2 years, if they're doing the animation off of her voice, like, you animate based on people's voices, you know?
Sure.
And so it's like, I would probably have been frustrating for someone coming into that to have to, like, meld their voice acting to what is already, like, a very, obviously, like, a very specific sound they're already looking for. So I think that was a good choice.
Yeah. And I've got some info for you about some of the representation in this movie.
Wow. Representation time.
So this is the first Disney Pixar film to include two minor characters who have type 1 diabetes. That is recognized by having, I guess, it's similar to glucose sensors or insulin pumps that is visible on the characters. But they're decade accurate, so they're what would have been used in the early 2000s. The tech supervisor, this was her idea, Susan Fong, because she had diabetes, type 1 diabetes, since she was a child, like 5 or 6 years old, she was diagnosed. And she brought the idea to the creative team and was like, hey, like, what if we just did this? And they were like,
yeah,
why not? Let's do it. And it was interesting to read about this specifically. I read an interview that someone did with her, and they were talking about how the crew, when they were animating this character, who, if you don't know, what the main one of these two minor characters is the girl who is in the bathroom stall when she comes in and comes out of the bathroom stall and, like, stares at her, and she kind of, like, closes her back into the bathroom stall, that little scene. So I guess it sounded cool because the crew was talking about how they were able to really learn about diabetes and, you know, what the character would be using at the time and making it period accurate and all that stuff. So it's cool that, like, people can be seen in representation, but also it teaches the people new things who are putting the representation in the movies, which I thought was a cool perspective because I hadn't really, like, thought about that before. Another thing that's notable that people have been talking about is the inclusion of anime and manga styles, which was very important to the creators because a lot of them are Asian and grew up watching anime shows, anime movies, and reading, like, anime and manga comics, and so they were able to incorporate a lot of that. Most notably was the eyes when they did the, like, sparkly,
cute eyes. I even know that. So I was like, oh, I see that.
Yeah. So that was cool to kind of read about how, it was really important for the creators to be able to, include that kind of style and combine it with the style they're used to working on at Pixar. And then also, obviously, the Asian North American, specifically Asian Canadian representation. Sandra Oh talked about this because she is Asian Canadian and lived in Toronto. And so she was really excited to be voicing a role. She played the mom, but voicing a role that was in a place she had lived and kind of resonated with her Asian Canadian immigrant experience. And a lot of the creators and crew also have talked about their experience as children or family of immigrants and how important it was to them in creating this film. And then Domi, she has talked a lot about her culture and how important it was for her to watch movies with specific cultures represented that have been inspiring for her and how she wanted to make sure she included that. And one thing she talked about, which I thought was cool, was she referenced food items and how important that is to her cultural experience and putting that in her movies, which obviously was very clear with Bao. And then with this, the dad cooks a lot and there's a scene where he's cooking. And she actually wrote a webcomic at one point in between interning at Pixar and working there called My Food Fantasies, which was like an anime webcomic that was about, like, food that was living and stuff like that.
VeggieTales.
Yeah, sure.
Pretty much, yeah. I think that's definitely obvious in the movie. And even with, because they have the documentary out now on Disney Plus as well, that goes into the making of the movie and interviews a lot of the people involved. It was really cool to see how they took pieces of all of them and put themselves in the movie. Yeah. Even like how someone's nose looked, they're like, oh, why don't we just do that on this character? Like, so it's really interesting to see, especially in animation, because you can just like create the world and the characters, like make them amalgamations of everyone working on the story and in the room.
Yeah, so, and they talked in that documentary about how you know, they had family members or lived in China or you know, with a family member who had a temple or lived beside a temple, and being able to apply those things in the Lee family temple in the movie, which is really cool that they were able to make it such a personal experience for them. And then briefly, I will mention the release, because this is
a lot going on controversial.
So it's one of two Pixar films in 2022. So we're also getting Lightyear this year over the summer. Mm. Both originally were supposed to have been released in theaters. The switch to streaming without a theatrical release and without a paywall was announced on January 7th. So this is similar to the backlash that happened when Luca was announced this way, where it would be this is so frustrating, and it got backlash from employees, people who worked on the film, from audience members.
I saw
members.
More from this one, I think, like for this movie specifically than Luca. I saw even more annoyance at this decision.
Yeah, and I think that's because other movies are coming out now. When Luca came out, COVID was COVID is still very present.
That was right when theaters were opening.
Yeah,
it was
like,
and they would have had to, they wouldn't have been able to know that, you know, in
that
March,
decision
maybe.
Made
so.
More sense to me than this one.
Yeah, definitely.
So the reason they said was COVID-19, but movies such as Shang-Chi and Eternals, which were both released in the height of COVID, remained in theaters for 70 days before hitting streaming. West Side Story streaming release came 80 plus days after its theatrical release. Encanto was in theaters only around 1 month before its streaming release.
Yeah.
That, I think, if it had done anything, like, I'm not a super big fan of the special access paywall thing on Disney. I think $30 is a high price point. But
yeah,
I think that it could have done a simultaneous release, which has worked very well for HBO. Also, it could have done what Encanto did, which obviously was extremely successful for them, where it does a very short theatrical run and then goes straight to streaming. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's
Encanto, all through February, my theater was doing reissues of Encanto.
Our theater
like, they
is
took
playing
it out,
right now.
And then they put it back in because like, it's so popular. So it's like, obviously, they don't care about the COVID-related reasons for not putting things in theaters. I just think it's obvious, mostly, they value their own films over Disney's, over Pixar's films, because Raya got the 30-day, no, Raya got the paywall, and they put Encanto in theaters first.
And Jungle
I think the
Cruise
only reason
as well.
That Jungle Cruise, and the only reason they're putting Lightyear in theaters is because it's Buzz Lightyear. So they value that property, but they don't value the like Luca or Turning Red, which are like very original stories. No one knows who the characters are, but Lightyear, they're like, oh, it's Buzz Lightyear. People will come.
Yeah.
So it is annoying.
They did release the movie in theaters in countries that do not have Disney Plus, so that those people could still see it.
That's okay.
And this excludes Russia, because Disney is pausing all releases in Russia right now during the war on Ukraine.
Right. So, yeah, Disney, I just don't understand, really. Like, I mean, I understand, I guess, because it's for profit, but It's just very frustrating.
Yeah, and it's a lot of speculation. Obviously, like, we don't know for sure. I would guess the best is, like you said, it's about money and who's going to come and see it, and putting money into IPs and not into original stories. Right.
Well, into IPs and their own stories, because, like, they would rather put... They value their own in-house movies over the second party movies.
Yeah.
Which is frustrating.
Yeah, it's very disappointing. Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that this is still, it seems like, getting a lot of traction and a lot of people are still watching it and talking about it. But I do think that it should have gotten a theatrical release. I mean, I wanted to see, and I would kill to see Luca in the theater.
Yeah, re-release it. Maybe this summer, maybe, I think, please.
Well, yeah, they're doing Encanto $5 fan favorites right now. Like, why can't you do a Luca $5 fan favorite?
Luca's a fan favorite in my heart, so.
Yeah, it's frustrating, but yeah, I'm at least glad that people are still watching it, regardless.
Yeah, it seems like both Luca and this, even though they were on stream, and Soul, even, like, all three of those were only streaming, but they were, like, what everyone was talking about for, like, at least a week, you know. Mm-hmm. Luca had a huge, like, thing on TikTok. There was, so there are obviously still people watching them. It's just disappointing, I think, mostly for the artists, like, not getting to see their film in a theater, which is, like, a big deal. So it is, I do feel bad for them, because they worked a long time on this and really hard. So I hope that at least they're able to see some of the comments online, because there are a lot of people talking about this movie and, like, praising it. So hopefully they can see that, and that's nice, at least. I think they did get a premiere, so maybe they got to see it once in theaters, which is nice.
It's screened in LA for, I think, like, at least 1 week they're screening it in LA, maybe two.
Well, that's nice, I guess. But, yeah, I hope that this isn't a trend, because it would be really disappointing for animation fans out there.
Yeah.
Do you want me to read the summary real quick of this movie, then we can jump into some non-spoiler thoughts?
Yeah, that sounds great. Why don't you go ahead and read it?
May is 13. She loves hanging out with her friends, taking care of her Tamagotchi, singing along to the super cute boy band Four Town, and helping with running the Lee family's temple in Chinatown. Everything seems to be going swimmingly, until one day she wakes up as a giant red panda. May quickly learns that the panda transformation, which is ancestral, is caused by her emotions. Will May be able to get the panda contained and convince her parents to let her see Four Town in concert? Or will she get stuck as the panda and have to live under her strict mother's control forever?
Wow.
The classic conflict there. Do I pick the panda or the mom?
Yeah.
What do I pick? Yeah, it's a pretty, like, standard plot, I think. You know, like, even though it's obviously, like, the red panda aspect is unique, because we haven't seen anyone specifically turn into a red panda in a movie. It's a very, like, coming of age. We've had a lot of people in Pixar movies turn into animals, as we know. I think it definitely, like, when you watch the trailer, it's, like, very obvious, like, oh, yeah, this is, like, just, like, a coming of age Pixar movie. Disney movie that slots in with the other ones. I think when you dive into the movie, it's obviously very unique in some aspects, but on the surface anyway, I can see why they would have greenlit this, because, like, it definitely seems like right up their alley. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was really fun and enjoyable, and the characters were interesting. And the plot was cute, and the friend group was cute. It just is all very cute.
Yeah, I liked it a lot too. I didn't know what to expect, I think, because I think the trailers just were edited not very well.
Yeah.
So I think the trailers definitely threw me a little bit. But I was excited, because I think I like Pixar, obviously, and I also think that the animation style was similar to Luca in that it was different. Like, it looked different than, like, what maybe Raya, a movie like that, would look
like.
Yeah,
than,
like,
the standard Disney big eyes, pretty round, oval face.
Right. Like, I think it's almost like with these last two movies that Pixar has made, they're like combining Disney, like American animation, and like Studio Ghibli kind of themes and colors and just aspects of that, and like mushing them together. And I think it works pretty well because it gives it like a lot more whimsy than like you watch Soul and it's like a very realistic portrayal of everything, and it just doesn't have the same amount of like pop to it as some of these movies do with the color palette and the way that the characters move throughout the world. So I really loved the animation style. That was the first thing I think that jumped out at me, because in the beginning you have her voiceover like her breaking the fourth wall to the camera, and I thought it was so cool, like all the way that they were animating her with her and the like the title card. I thought that was so funny.
Yeah.
That just like so much personality in those first 5 minutes that really got me excited for the rest. Cause again, I was like, I think this is going to be good. But then after those first 5 minutes, I was pretty much sold, cause there's just so much personality that bursts out of the screen.
Yeah, totally. And the animation too was just like really good. Like, I mean, so impressive. I just don't understand how Pixar has gotten so good at animating. Like, I think we really saw it with Toy Story 4, but then with like these other ones that have come out, it's just like, how do you do that? I don't get it. I don't know. I mean, you think of like the panda with all the like fur and the hairs and stuff, and you're like, how do you do it? How do you make it look good? Like,
yeah. And I like how now it's just like taken for granted almost. You're just like, oh yeah, that looks great. Like, I don't think it's like gotten so good that I sometimes don't even think about it, like how good it is. The one scene obviously where like it's basically an animation showcase is the cooking scene. So that was like the main, the one scene where the animation really jumps out. You're like, oh wow.
It is,
okay,
that,
this looks pretty great.
Brief 30 seconds where he is cooking and it's like, whoosh, 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 whoosh,
whoosh. A little water droplets.
And the stuff is on the pan flying, and it cuts to like speed ramping where it's slow motion and then fast again. And the sound is like so good. I was like, this is crazy. I need a cooking show now of this dad doing like just cooking. That would be so funny. Like, I could just sit there and watch a show of them animation of this food because it was that good.
It reminded me of the scene in Isle of Dogs where like they have him making the soup. Do you remember that scene?
Yeah.
It's like the guy making the food, and it's like that was the one scene everyone talked about. It's like very similar where it's like both of them are about making food. And like their animation just like showcases. That scene was obviously very good. What did you think about the voice acting? Because we already talked a little bit about May and like her voice actor and how she was new, but then obviously she's working with some more like experienced voice actors.
Sure.
So
yeah, I thought it was good. One thing I appreciated is with kids, you know, kids can be very good voice actors. But a lot of kids sound the same when they're voice acting because they're kids. And I appreciated, I know, I'm not sure how old all the people are that they cast as. I know most of them maybe
the
were like 16 or older who were in the friend group. But I appreciate that they were all so different and really like talked different and had different you know, cadence in the way they spoke, like the goth girl Priya, who people have been talking about, like she spoke like a teenager who is trying to be goth. And was very impressive to me because it's like, it just adds another layer to the characters. And obviously Sandra Oh's, you know, always going to be good. And I thought the dad was good too. I liked that he kind of was just like, very calm.
He was just vibing.
And his voice was very soft and chill, which like was perfect in balancing out the mom, who's like very loud and sharp and like So I thought the voice acting was really good.
Yeah, and I think with how you said it, it's like it's all very unique. I think that plays into like how you were saying they put a lot of their own lives in this, and it really makes every. It really just feels like a very alive world where there's a lot of unique characteristics around you. Like, it just feels very realistic rather than, like, I think sometimes with the kids especially, it can feel like a copy-paste kind of thing or archetypal. But the friend group was just, like, probably one of the best aspects of the movie.
It was definitely my favorite aspect of the movie.
Because they did such a good job of establishing, like, their relationship, even though, like, because we jump right into, like, when they're, like, best friends and, like, they feel like they've known each other for years. And it just makes you like them. And you're like, oh, wow, this friend group is so cool. And they just want to go see this concert, and I want to see the concert too, so.
Yeah, and one thing I really appreciated about that is, like, when you're 13, you know, you're friends with a lot of different people. And I remember my friend group, like, was all, like, we are all so different. But it was like,
right, exactly,
we all loved Hunger Games. So,
you
know,
there's like you bond over one
you bond
thing,
over the thing,
but then you're all so
the
different.
The fandom,
in
you're all in, you know, Twilight or Harry Potter, but then you're also all super different.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was really cool because I felt like, obviously, especially with girls, because women wrote this movie and were 13-year-old girls that had these experiences, it felt very true to a 13-year-old girl experience where, like, you are super into fandoms and you're super into a band. Like, you know, for me, Jonas Brothers or One Direction, you know, it was like that was what all my friends were into. So I felt like they really captured that in a way that I haven't seen a lot, just really made the friend group feel very real. Which is awesome. And as far as I know, everyone that was cast in this, it was, like, correct racially. Like, they cast the right race in the roles, which is something that Disney does not do very often casting white people in roles of color. I think they did
classic
because, you know, her friend group is very diverse as well. I just think it's very cool. I just love it. I hope that kids can watch it and also think that is cool and be like, oh, it's okay to, like, have friends that are different and, like,
yeah, or like it's like my friend group. Yeah, come, like, they see, even if they don't like maybe a band, it's like you have that one thing that you're all like, just that's all you talk about. That's kind of what brought you together. And I like to like how. This isn't really a spoiler. I won't say specifically, but, like, they have, like, a very common goal that's, like, a really specific goal, and they're all just, like, all their time is just spent working on this one thing. It's just very true to that age where it's, like, it feels like the biggest thing in the world.
Yeah, you hyper-fixate on something.
For 2 months, you only do this one thing together every day and work towards this goal. So, yeah, I thought that was good, and even, like, broadening out from that, the setting overall felt very real too, and I wish they had actually maybe been in the town a little bit more, because we see a little bit of it in the beginning, and I loved the way that they, how, like, interesting the town looked, and they had the convenience store and, like, just all the shops as she was going down the street. I do wish actually there was maybe even a little bit more of that, because I think it was obvious they put a lot of thought into what Toronto in 2002 looked like, you know, like, research that and really wanted to make it authentic. So
yeah.
I would have liked to see maybe even more, but the setting of Toronto is, like, just a cool setting. I think also they said, because the panda is red and white, and then so you have the Canadian flag that's red and white.
Aww.
But also
thought the, like, her bedroom was really awesome too, the way that they did the production of her bedroom and, like, making it feel very, you know, 2002 13-year-old girl with the bed
I don't think the under the bed was dusty enough though, like, that was it's definitely, like, not that clean under a bed.
Yeah.
You know, like, you go under there, she would have been sneezing. I don't know. She has all, because then she keeps all her stuff under there. Like, that stuff would not have stayed that nice. That's not how going under beds works. But yeah, I wish actually that they had not taken her out of her room, because I would have liked to see it in her room a little bit more, because I think you can get so much from characters if you show the audience their room, especially like teenage characters, because that's like half of their life is just spent in their room and like decorating it. So yeah.
What did you think of the music, the score, and the boy band tracks?
Gotta say, I don't remember the score at all. So okay. I'm not sure if that's, I just didn't listen to it. So it just, scores usually don't jump out to me unless I'm really focusing on it.
It was pretty good. The music, I noticed it a few times, and then I listened back to it this week and thought it was good.
Yeah, he's a good composer, so I'm sure it is good. I just wasn't focusing on that. The music for the boy band was cool. Like, it really, they did a good job of making it, like everything else, like really 2002-esque. And even though obviously they're written now, just the way that they were produced and the instruments they used, like they did a good job of making it feel like this could be a band that exists in our world and people would obsess over.
Phineas was the one who did it.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. He did a good job. They were good. I would have liked even a little more because we only got like half a song.
Yeah. At the concert. You can listen to all the songs. They're all okay. The Four Towns. There's right. like multiple Four Towns songs. All
right.
Streaming
Perfect.
On Spotify.
Love it. Number one artist in my Spotify Wrapped.
Four Town.
That's funny.
Well, do you want to take a quick ad break and then come back and maybe talk some spoilers?
Yeah, we'll get a little more into the themes because we can't really get into that unless we spoil the plot. So yeah, we'll take a quick ad break and when we come back, we'll be just getting into some spoilers.
We're back. Dun, 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 dun,
dun. I guess quickly running through some of the plot points, what I was referring to before was like them working towards getting the money for the concert, which I thought was a really fun like main conflict, I guess, like not the main conflict, but it is a secondary conflict, I guess, in the main conflict. But I really liked that aspect of it because like I said, it felt very true. You have the board scribbling it up when trying to get all the money. I don't know how well this worked for you when the reveal of the concert date was wrong. Because it was like, they thought it was, I don't remember what day, but they thought it was a week earlier. But then it was actually on the night that the ritual was supposed to happen.
Yeah.
So I thought that was like, I know it needed to happen, obviously. I just don't know if happening like that. Maybe if it got delayed, would have been better.
Yeah, that didn't really work for me.
Because like they never looked at the concert date ever. Like, in the last 3 weeks, like, never?
Yeah,
you never looked
right.
at the poster again? Yeah, maybe, like, if it got delayed and they had to push it back a week, that would have just worked better for me. And it would have made it feel, like, less their fault. Because it was, like, you guys worked so hard and you couldn't, like, figure out this one detail.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely, that felt weird to me.
Yeah, I felt bad for the girl, too, because I'm like, man. Because the one that had the poster, like, she had one job. And then you go to they do the ritual. And the ritual, I think, is the main thing we should talk about in spoiler thematic stuff. Because that's, like,
the
turning
file,
point of the movie, you know? And, like, really relates to the theme, I guess.
Yeah.
So what do you think about the first ritual, I guess, and how that was
fun? I thought it was cool. I think it was fun that kind of the whole family came together and the aunties came to help and the grandma was there and the mom was there and the dad was just vibing. I thought it was cool. I liked how, you know, obviously they put in a lot of research into doing, you know, the chanting in the Cantonese and stuff like that, which was cool to kind of see that in this setting in a kids movie and be able to know that this is introducing, you know, an ancestral ritual to a wide audience. And I thought that was cool. I thought it looked cool. I liked when she went up and then was in the like astral plane with all the trees and it was a little bit warped, almost like, you know, the phone app that everyone used for a while, Hooji app, where it kind of like warps. Yeah. It looked almost like that, but better. And I liked that. I thought it was cool. I liked that it completely took you out of the space and sort of just let her be in a focused central place, and sort of that decision she had to make on whether or not she was going to break through the wall.
Yeah, because I was confused, I guess, before, like, how they were going to visually show that, like, what the ritual would look like of the panda coming out of her and, like, being trapped. So I really liked how they decided to portray that with, like, the wall. And then it made sense why they said the more you let the panda out, the harder it is, because, like, it's harder to separate the panda from yourself, because that's essentially what it's doing. Like, it's they're removing these two, like, parts. And I thought that was really interesting, because you could see, like, the struggle it was for her to try to get through that. And she almost did it, but then she was like, no, not doing this. And then she went back in. I think my big thing was I liked both that one, and once they were in the ritual, I liked the idea of, like, the mom being younger, and I thought that was an interesting idea. I just was I felt like it almost felt like a double, like, there was two, like, climax points where, like, you had the first ritual, and that was, like, the big reveal, like, oh, wow, she did it. And then you had the next ritual, which, like, okay, I guess this is the climax, which it just felt a little odd, I guess, to do.
To rehash
the Disney and, yeah, to rehash it and to, like, I feel like Disney, this is one thing I liked about Luca a lot, which, like, it didn't feel, that movie didn't feel like it had to have, like, a final boss for the climax. I feel like so many kids movies now feel like they have to have, like, a final boss fight for their, like, they have to have, like, a huge thing, like Moana, they have to fight this huge thing at the end, or, like, it's always, like, a very big, I don't know, like, they always just have to make the stakes so high.
That was my least favorite part of this, was that final boss, like, at the concert, because it just felt off kilter from the rest of the movie for me, tonally. And
definitely,
I'm also just not into that big boss thing anymore. I just don't vibe with it. I don't love it. And for me,
it
put me off from it, I guess.
Too high stakes, because the whole movie, the stakes are, well, the point of these kind of movies is that, yes, the stakes are low, but for our characters, the stakes are very high. Like, this is, like, high stakes for them, you know? But that's how coming-of-age stories kind of work. But with that ending, it was like, okay, now the stakes are actually high, because they're, like, destroying a stadium. And it just brought, it just was, like, felt, like you said, off kilter from the rest of the film, which was a lot lower stakes in, like, setting, I guess.
And I really do like the idea of the rest of the family coming together and sort of releasing their pandas to
That was cool.
Help.
That was a
although
cool
I was
idea.
A little bit confused, because they were able to re-trap the pandas, which it was this whole thing about how, like, you can't ever redo the ceremony.
I know. There was a couple things about the ceremony ritual. I was like, I don't understand how
and
this
I guess,
works,
like,
exactly.
It was maybe only open because May reopened the astral plane, so they were entering May's
Well, I guess you can do it whenever there is a red moon.
Yeah, but they kept saying, like, if you miss it now, you're never going to be able to do it.
Yeah,
I mean, don't
maybe
know.
They were
it
like,
just felt
if you
too
miss it now, you... Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. It just felt very, like, I don't know, like, if they were going to... It just, that, it confused me. And it felt like it rolled back on kind of the stakes they set for May as the panda, when then all of a sudden it was like, oh, we'll just break ours, which I like, but it was like, we'll break ours and then we'll change back and then you can still be your panda.
Yeah, it was kind of weird, like, that they decided to also leave theirs behind too, you know? It was, I mean, maybe it's like they've been without it so long that they're like, I just am not going to keep it any like you are, you know? I liked the scene of them breaking it and the idea, but maybe it would have worked better if it was just the mom. Because then it would have only been them two in the astral plane, and it could have been an even more intimate scene. Because, like, then you have the aunts, and it's like, I feel like we just didn't get enough time with them to really know who they are. So they're just kind of there. It's like, all right, these other people here are now, maybe just the mom and the grandma. I don't know. Just, like, lower down on how many people are actually doing this.
Yeah, and I mean, but, it's like, they made her so massive that, like, they had to, obviously. Yeah, they made her way too big. Like, if she had been a little bit smaller, then obviously, like, May would still need the help, but the grandma would have been enough help, I guess.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I think maybe that was the issue, was making her, like, a Godzilla size. Because, like, she could have been big, but she didn't have to be, like, that big. Because maybe she just goes to the concert and disrupts the concert, you know? Like, she doesn't have to tear the stadium down. That might have made the stakes feel a little less out there, I guess. But that was, like, my main story problem with the movie, was just how that was executed. Other than that, though, I think this was, like, really, like, a really nice, just cool movie. I liked all the themes that it was presenting. And it was very nuanced in the ending, I thought. Like, about as nuanced as it could be for, like, a kid's movie, where she was embracing this other part of herself, but she was also, like, trying to figure out how to still have a relationship with her mom, you know, in that way.
Yeah.
And not be like what happened to her mom with her grandma, and, like, how they had to basically end their relationship. And so I liked it a little bit ambiguous there. Like, they didn't have quite the answer yet. It's just, like, showing how it is, where, yeah, you can do this, but then it's like there's always going to be this part of you that's trying to figure out how to combine those two things and make them live in harmony. Where,
yeah, definitely,
I still have that relationship with your parents while also becoming your own person, I guess, is what they were trying to wrestle with in the movie.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think, too, with the themes, there's so many different kind of bigger themes that are underlying throughout it that I think, you know, whoever's watching it, whatever they have experienced in their life, that they can kind of pull different themes out, whether it's the friend group and their kind of relationship and May trying to not lie to them, but also not lie to her mom and figuring out, or the generational stuff, or her relationship with her mom, or her mom's relationship with her grandma. Like, there's all these different things that are really big themes, but also are sort of underlying. Like, they aren't as big as the main theme, but they are, you know, also interlaced in it as well.
Yeah, they're trying to tackle a lot, but I think they pretty much managed to do it. And it's cool because even though, like I said, we've seen coming of age stories all the time, even in Pixar's own films with Inside Out, that's a sort of coming of age story of a girl that's a little younger than this. But I think we've never seen it in this form before, where it's like this specific to like a type of person or an age range. And I think it's really cool that we're getting more specific stories, I guess, because I'm tired of stories that are like so broad and like, oh, anyone can relate to this story. But and like sometimes when you have a specific story that's like very specific to a certain person, that's like the point of movies, is like getting other perspectives and people being able to share what they went through, you know, and like what their life is like.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that they got to make this, because it's a really cool just example of one of those stories where it is a very specific story, but there's a lot that you can take from it, even if you're not a 13-year-old girl in Toronto.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. And I will say too, like, for the very specific things, obviously this does not apply to you, but I have never seen a movie positively talk about periods or the menstrual cycle at all. Like,
a kid's movie.
Especially, I think, a kid's movie.
Yeah.
But usually when I have seen it in other things, whether it's a TV show or a movie, it's always a joke, like, as in, oh, the woman is mad this week. Like, it's her time of the month. Make sure you get her chocolate and flowers and, like, avoid her because she's angry. And, like, that is such a bad perspective. I think it's great that they, for one, are putting this in children's content in a way that is just super normalizing it, and also, like, in a way that's positive and not, like, degrading about women or making it more of a thing. Like, it's just like, oh, this happens. Here, I have this stuff for you. I'm proud of you. I still love you. It's going to be okay. Like, which a lot of young girls don't really get to hear. And I thought that that was really cool.
Yeah, I think that that scene in particular was a really cool scene. Because it comes up only one other time, I think, when she's in school.
Yes.
Right? And, like, her mom has the pads, that, like, outside the window. Yes. Which was an interesting juxtaposition, because it's, like, in the house, it seems so, like, okay, cool or normal. But then, like, once she's in school, it's, like, the most embarrassing thing
it's so
that
mortifying.
Could have ever happened to her.
And, like, when so you're, like, a kid, too, and you're in middle school and, like, you know, you're in seventh grade and you've started your period, people know, because it's like you have to go to the nurse's office or you need something. And then it's like you raise your hand and you're like, I need to go to the bathroom or see the nurse. And the teacher's like, oh, you can't go to the bathroom right now. We're in class. Or like, if everyone knows you're going to the nurse, it's like, I don't know. It just, it's a very mortifying experience. And I'm glad that they showed that, because it is just gonna be that way, because that's just the way middle school is everything in middle school is embarrassing. Your mom showing up to school is embarrassing.
I think maybe they could have not have it been the mom, because I think the mom, like, spying on her felt like a little too cartoony. Like literally cartoony, but like not realistic, where like I know she's a very overprotective mom. But that does not seem like something that she would have done, is, like, hide up behind a tree and, like, try to give her something through the window. I don't know what even her plan was. It could have been something like you said, maybe, where, like, she had to go to the nurse or something.
Yeah,
like,
it was called to the nurse's office or something like that.
And then her mom was there or something.
Yeah, because everyone still knows. I mean, kids know.
Yeah, I don't have too much more to say. I think it's interesting that there's a lot of – there's – a very positive reaction to this movie online, but then there's obviously a very negative reaction from a certain groups of people as well.
I wonder who.
And it just it's interesting that people are having the conversation, I guess, of like comparing this to other kids movies and what is already accepted in kids movies. And like, why is it accepted that we can have like Mr. Incredible blow something up and like kill people, or like and like, you know, like in that way, but we can't, this can't be in a kids movie, I guess, because that's what, if people are saying that this is inappropriate for kids, like, well, what is the line, like, and why is murder more okay than just showing
and the best more accurate total comparison that I've seen today, especially based on, because people are mad about she's rebelling and she's not punished for rebelling and she's disrespectful to her mother and she, you know, is not allowed to have privacy and make choices about her own body. But that is being mostly compared to Riley in Inside Out, who steals her mom's credit card, buys a bus ticket,
runs away from home right.
You know, and, you know, is rude to her parents, yells at her parents, all those kind of things. And it's like, why was, what, where is the, like,
what's it, where, yeah, what is, what makes this different?
I mean, I have my suspicions, but
I think, though, I mean, people aren't stupid. Like, the metaphor of the panda, like, can be, is, like, very obvious, you know? Yeah. And I think that maybe makes it, the idea of, like, her accepting that, I think people, that is, I think, what made more people, like, mad about it, you know? Where it's, like, she's, to them, she's embracing her rebellion, I guess. I don't know, which is not what that scene is about, or, I don't know. They're just so, people are so weird.
Well, I've also seen, you know, I don't know if you've seen this, but I've seen some very alt-right people posting that the panda and the large sparkly eyes are a sign of pedophilia, and it's listed like on the FBI website that like pandas are a symbol of predators, which, weird.
Definitely. What about Express Panda?
I don't know.
Like Panda Express.
I don't know.
Panda Express, guys. Come on. People love pandas.
I don't. It's just so crazy. Yeah. Like, the way people get worked up about that kind of stuff is so weird to me. And I definitely think there's a lot of, like, you know, I knew it was going to happen when I heard a certain line in the movie. I was like, oh, my God, I am going to be seeing this on Facebook.
Every day.
For the next week. Again, it's what happens all the time. I don't even know how many times conservatives have boycotted Disney over some movie that they don't like, you know, whether it's a gay character or anything else. And
right
here we are again. Same cycle, same thing.
Back at it. I think that this movie, hopefully, since it's on Disney Plus, it's being advertised pretty widely. I hope more people get to see it and hopefully can like take some or some people that are hurt the girl's age, like they can see themselves in it, like we were saying a little bit before. And even I think even if you're like a parent, there's like an aspect of the movie that you can take, which is definitely. Like because you see the mom, and when you see her as a kid, that like is an obvious, like she's just trying her best, you know, is really what it's trying to say. And like they both are at their core the same person.
Yeah.
And like trying to figure out how to raise someone that like is your daughter, like in basically like stuff that you went through and just navigating those waters. Lots of interesting things that I think that people, if they just watch the movie, will enjoy, because it's a lot deeper than most, and not deep though in the way that like Soul is deep, or it's like, oh, it's about death. I don't know. But there's like a lot of like just messages that they put in this movie that are subtle but work. So, yeah.
So, where does this movie fit into your Pixar ranking?
So, right, it's pretty hard because I have a lot of ones that I haven't seen in a bit. I gave it 4 stars, so it's like towards the bottom of the 4 stars. Right now I have it at basically tied with Toy Story 3 and Nemo, I would say. I don't like Nemo, I don't think, as much as you do.
Yeah, I like Nemo.
I have it at 12. So it's under, like, Ratatouille, Monsters, Inc., all, like, the great ones, basically, that I just really love. So it's, like, right on that line for me right now, where I'm not sure if it's in that super top tier, but it's definitely, like, straddling that line of being, like, a very good Pixar movie.
Sure. Yeah, I have it at 15, so I gave it 3.5 stars, and I have it right above Soul and right below Cars.
Man, there you go. Gotta love Cars.
I liked Cars a lot as a kid.
No, Cars 1 is not bad. I definitely, I don't have the time for this, but if I, like, watch them in chronological order, I would be interested to see what my rankings would look like, you know, because there's a lot of them I just haven't seen in a while. I would need a new perspective on. So yeah, I might, maybe I'll do that.
And since my last Pixar ranking, I have moved Luca up my list, and it is now at number 3, below Monsters, Inc. and Up, and above Coco and Wall-E.
Wow, look at that. Luca just hitting those top ranks.
All right, so our question of the week is, what fandom were you into when you were 13? So obviously for them, it's 4Town. For me, I would say it was probably Hunger Games, Percy Jackson, along those lines. What was it for you?
Probably Harry Potter, unfortunately. Not great right now for me.
Well,
but that would probably be it. Yeah,
that was before she was exposed as an awful, terrible, heinous, Voldemort criminal person.
But yeah, that would probably be it. It's hard. I'd have to look back at like some things, but that would probably be, I think I was very into Hunger Games too, though. Like all that like dystopian stuff that people were getting into in the early 2010s that fell off in like 5 years. It was like so big, dystopian young adult dystopian novels and stories, and then they just fell off. Divergent killed it, I think. Those movies.
I was like very, very, very into the Divergent fandom as well.
Man, Were you sad when they didn't make the last one?
I was not, because I felt like the movies really fell off, but I did really, really like the books. I was also
I think the movies ruined it, not the books. I don't know about the books, but the movies for me.
I loved the books. I was also very into Sherlock.
Sherlock was a classic.
Doctor Who.
Wow.
I mean, I was into it. That I just was a fandom kid. That's the way it is.
I'm still a fandom kid. Something.
I still hyperfixate on a new thing every month, and I'm fine with that. I claim
we are in the Succession fandom.
Yes. Well,
what is the name of the fandom? What would be the Succession fandom name? The Succession, the Conheads, the Successors.
I don't know. That's a good one.
I don't
know.
Maybe that Successors is not bad. Yeah, the Success Stories. That was a bad one. but that question of the week, you can answer on any of our social media platforms, which is Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. So go on there. Let us know what your answer is. You can also do it on Spotify, email. Everything's down below. So just check that out.
Yeah, and give us some 5-star reviews. Engage with our content so that we can feel good about ourselves.
Just play our podcast while you sleep at night. Like, just keep it on a very low volume. That's what Justin Bieber said to do. So you know that's how you get the plays.
Yeah, and
remember that when he was like, "How to get yummy to number one." Stream it while you sleep on the lowest volume. That was class. That was a classic time.
That's funny.
Anyway.
Well, what is our next episode?
Well, it's that time of year again. You know, the Oscars are here. We're getting kind of excited. I think this has been a bit of a long Oscar season, so I'm kind of just like ready for it to be done. But I'm excited for the show. And to see what ends up winning. So we're going to be talking about our nominations, predictions, and just comments on a lot of the stuff that's been happening with the Oscars leading up to the show. Because there's been a lot going on this year, as most of you listening probably know. So we'll maybe go over
and
that.
And we haven't
the
had
show
a chance
stuff.
To kind of talk about what we thought was snubbed or people who got in that maybe shouldn't have gotten a nomination. You never know. So
Nicole Kidman?
What?
What? What are you talking about?
We'll be talking about that. It should be fun. We'll make some predictions, which will obviously be right because we're so smart.
We did pretty good last year.
I thought we did pretty good last year. I won't make so this won't be our final predictions. We'll post those on social media usually the night of the Oscars before it starts. But this will be our kind of just talk about.
Yeah, this is like most of them are like 80% predictions. Yeah. And then sometimes I'll change them last minute because I'm like, no, this is what's going to win Best Picture this year. I don't know what I thought was going to win last year. I think it was Nomadland. I think I got it right.
Yeah. I mean,
sometimes with Best Picture, I like am like I try to be cool and I'm like, I'm going to go wild.
This year, there's a lot. It's not as locked this year as it has been in previous years.
It could go any way.
So there's a lot to talk about. So make sure you tune in because we're very smart and we know all the things. So
yeah, that's our tagline now.
Anyway,
anything else until then?
No.
All right. Well, until next time, I'm Noah.
And I'm Kayla. And
we're your second hand film critics.